Friends, we're linking now with Mark Thompson, and of course, Mark Thompson is the founder, member, and the CEO of Relatives for Justice, based in Belfast, in Northern Ireland. And Mark, you're very welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Adrian. It's a pleasure.
Tell us, there so many things have taken place over the decades with respect to conflict, attempts at conflict resolution. I think maybe a good place to start might be with the principles. We've had the Sullivan principles, we've had McBride principles, and of course now we have the McGuinness principles, and one of the principles that was espoused by Martin McGuinness, you know, had to do with equal justice for victims of the families and their of victims of conflict and their families, and it basically, you know, has to do with making sure that the past is dealt with, and that the you know, whereas many would say, at least anyway, that tremendous strides have been made since 1994. And with the Good Friday Agreement, that there are a lot of issues that have been constantly swept under the carpet. As a founder, member, and CEO of Relatives for Justice, Mark, can you give us just a background of how the organization of which you're a founder got started, and when?
Well, Relatives for Justice was founded in April 1991, and the people that were instrumental in founding the organization, aside from a handful of relatives, was Monsignor Raymond Murray and Clara Riley, who both were involved in the Association for Legal Justice, which ran throughout the 1970s, that documented detentions, arrest, torture, and killings by the state of the nationalist population. And I suppose with the backdrop to the founding of Relatives for Justice in April 1991, there have been a number of very controversial shoot-to-kill incidents involving the British Army's SAS, now UC. And, of course, there was the whole issue of collusion, whereby people were being arrested and taken away. Their details and ties were passed to loyalist paramilitaries. And then those loyalist paramilitaries would arrive with weaponry provided by the intelligence services of the British state, MI5, the RUC Special Branch, and the British Army. And using those weapons and having safe passage to conduct and carry out assassinations, and then leave, and there was no justice. So against the backdrop of a whole range of legacy of state killings, where there was absolutely no accountability, no justice whatsoever, Relatives for Justice was founded. And the organization was founded to provide a support, practical support to families in the aftermath of getting into their homes, as simple as helping families lift carpet, soak them blood, or take furniture away, or just help out and provide basic support, and then to lobby and campaign about raising the fundamental questions that arose in the aftermath of those killings. And I suppose the organization was trying to grapple with all of that in the context and in the midst of the conflict back then. And as you made reference to Martin McGuinness and the principles, Martin rightly worked very diligently and very hard. He addressed the legacy of the past. He recognized the hurt campaign that had been endured by the unionist community and the British community as a result of the conflict in which the IRA was involved. But he also pointed out that over 20,000 Republicans went through the prisons, and no members of the RUC, given what they were involved in, went through the prisons, no members of the intelligence services. And despite almost 400 killings of nationalists and Catholics by the British Army, there were only ever four soldiers convicted and sent to prison. who had received life sentences, and those soldiers were released from anywhere of 2 years to 3 years into those sentences, released early and reinstated back into the British Army and given back their guns and put on duty. And I think there was an indicative message of the injustice of that injustice, if you will, on top of each other. So in terms of the peace process and trying to unravel and deal with the legacy of the conflict, we're trying to deal with the legacy of the state policy and practice of collusion, where there is impunity for state actions and deliberate killings, in which the British government now do not want the attorney for a story in the conflict. And we're visiting New York, and it's great to be on your show, Eugene, again. I had the pleasure of being on it many years ago with the Rockin' Island families and other people.
Yes, indeed.
And really, really what we're doing is we're looking at the policy of state collusion and murder in the Mid-Ulster area from the late 1980s and the early 1990s in the run-in to the peace process. And particularly, there's a book that's been penned by a book that involves our organization, Relatives for Justice and the Families, and a Professor Mark McGovern of Edgehill University in England. And we entered into a partnership where we produced a book that detailed evidential-based policy of collusion targeting a clustered area of Republicans in East Tyrone and in South Derry. And really what happened during the conflict, it was the killing of their relatives, uninvolved relatives. So Republican elected officials or former IRA prisoners or Republican activists would have been arrested, taken to interrogation centers, and threatened. But not only were they threatened, they told them that they would kill their uninvolved relatives and that they would send loyalists to carry out these killings. And it happened, and there's been no accountability for it. And of course, when we first raised the issue of collusion back in the, you know, the late 80s and about what was actually going on, because you have to remember what the British intelligence services did. They infiltrated the loyalist paramilitary organizations. They restructured them from within using agents and former British soldiers. They armed them with weapons from South Africa, illegally brought into Ireland. And those weapons went on to kill several hundred people, Catholics, myself, and even they turned their guns against themselves during their feuds between loyalists themselves. So there's a catalogue of killings to which the fingerprints of the British government and the intelligence and security services are all over these killings. And there's this battle about dealing with the legacy of the past in which the British state want to say, well, here are the bad guys, our Republicans, loyalists reacted. We may have made some mistakes, but really that's the story of the conflict. But the evidential base of this book and what we're actually about, telling the story through the families and the evidential base, the threats, what happened, the weaponry, tracing it through court cases we've been involved in, the ballistic and forensic reporting, we have put together the evidential base and the story of what actually happened and the responsibility and culpability of the British government. And we want to bring that to America because there's a huge Irish diaspora out there that has supported the peace process, have been involved in every step that we've taken forward. And we need to go forward and continue going forward, building truth, justice, reconciliation, and equality for all is what Martin McGuinness was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in some senses, what we're trying to do is bring this story, because it's a story that needs to be told. It's a story currently that the British government would like to deny and would like to bury and hide, and we won't allow that to happen. And there's a huge diaspora, particularly from Tyrone and the South Derry area in New York. And so we're going to be in O'Looney's Bar in Manhattan on Monday the 3rd of June at 7 p.m. And it's kind of, we kick off in Philadelphia on June the 2nd at the McSweeney Club. And so the details of the tour and the book and telling this story is on the Relatives for Justice website, and you can get the full details. And we will be selling the book, and the author and myself will be selling copies of the book. But importantly, we're also going to the Congress, and we're doing a bit of lobbying, because the one outstanding piece of the peace process jigsaw, if you will, has been dealing with the legacy of the past. And we've learned in this society that the institutions down and the whole noise is coming out of Westminster on top of Brexit is about an amnesty for British soldiers. And our answer is simple. Well, if you didn't do anything wrong, why would you need an amnesty? But you're denying the truth about what you did to these families. And there are hundreds of families affected by the policy of collusion. And in particular, in East Tyrone and South Derry, we put a microscopic lens over actually what happened. In forensic detail, we go through each and every one of those killings, and we kind of show the truth about what happened, whether it's the killing of Republicans while they were socializing, killing them at their workplace and isolating families, bringing fear and terror, because the British government used these death squads and loyalism to terrorize the nationalist and Catholic Republican population. And they did so. And it's the end game of the peace process, of dragging people to the table. The ante of this was stepped up a gear, and they were switched on and off at will when the political temperature permitted it to do so. And so they have to be accountable for that. But that's not accountable in a way that the truth is revealed. We're not talking about sending people to jails, and but we're talking about accountability and due process to which these families have always been denied. And the whole legacy of impunity for state actions, whether they were in uniform killing people or out of uniform or using loyalist paramilitaries through the policy practice of collusion, it all needs to be accounted for, because we need the truth of the past in terms of moving forward. So we're asking for Irish-American support, as always, in these matters, and in particular bringing this story through this book of this poor beginning on June the 2nd in Philadelphia, then New York, Washington, Boston, yeah. Rhode Island.
I'll give the calendar of events, but I want to come back to Professor Mark McGovern of Edgehill University, who will be traveling with you, obviously, who's the author the book Counterinsurgency and Collusion in Northern Ireland. Now, first of all, he's a highly respected professor. Where is Edgehill University, and what is its connection with Northern Ireland?
Well, Edgehill University is in Liverpool, in England. Mark McGovern himself, Professor McGovern, left the city of Derry at age 6 or 7 with his family. They emigrated to England because they couldn't get work, and he became a professor of sociology and history. We could have put this book together ourselves, but what we did is we looked out there for someone that was interested in working with us, someone that was interested in this particular area of work, and someone who had a track record. And Mark McGovern has a previous book, Ardoyne, The Untold Truth, which documents 99 killings in the North Belfast area of Ardoyne. And he did that project. And those 99 killings were carried out by the state, by loyalists, and by Republicans. So he's a track record in looking at conflict and truth recovery, both in Ireland and internationally. He's hugely respected. He's of a huge caliber. And we felt that partnering with him, and that he spent 4 or 5 years doing all the research with ourselves and so forth, and talking to the families, we were really, I suppose, as an access route for this. But it gives it much more credibility, because if we did this ourselves, of course, the British Navy would be the usual thing, sure, it's all made up, it's not true. What Professor McGovern has brought to this is a huge credibility to it. And from an English perspective, because he lives in Britain, he works in Britain, it opens up that whole different arena in terms of putting the lens on the whole policy of collusion. And I think he's done, I must say, and I would be slightly biased, but I think he's done a wonderful job. He's went into the homes of people. He's seen them as the human beings they are. He's seen them as the terrible injustices and terrible carnage that's been created, and the legacy in its wake of trauma, of denial of truth, of their battle and search for truth. And you know, it's an excellent book, it really is. And it not only does it look at what the British have done in Ireland in the context of the policy of collusion and counterinsurgency, it traces it historically to places like Aden and Indochina, as it was called, and the British Empire. So this policy was practiced each and every colony that the British sent its military to. You know, like the whole history of partition, gerrymandering, creating false majorities, you know, and its whole policy of counterinsurgency to use pseudo gangs to conduct all its dirty work and its dirty affairs when it seeks to try and maintain a distance and keep its hands clean. And really, that's what it's about, you know.
Yeah. I'd like to bring you. There are a couple of questions. First of all, the current negotiations, Brexit, the latest wrinkle in that Prime Minister Theresa May is obviously stepping down. The whole future of Northern Ireland rests pretty much with Brexit and whoever comes in, whether that person, that representative, that new prime minister will indeed be committed to making sure that the majority of people in Northern Ireland who didn't vote for Brexit in the first place, that the issues affecting, you know, not only the people of Northern Ireland, but for organizations like yours, for the Relatives for Justice, and those who, I think, most would agree, deserve, you know, some answers, some attention, and that it seems that in there have been many false steps along the way when you think that definitely the Relatives for Justice, the families of those, you know, who lost members of their families, connected with collusion of the forces at the time, that each time it looks like you're gaining traction, and this is not just with your organization, but for many of the groups in Ireland, indeed involved in trying to resolve the issues of the past, or at least make sure that they're not just, you know, ignored. Something else happens. So just from your perspective, whether it was expected or not, now the Prime Minister of Great Britain is stepping down, and how is that news received and perceived by you and your organization? Is that a plus or minus, or does it have very little to do with anything?
Well, it has, in some senses, everything to do with it. Brexit is a disaster right across all the social issues in Ireland. You know, in my view, it does provide potential for a threat to the Good Friday Agreement and the stability in terms of just the border. And the whole issue has been the backstop and protecting and ensuring the freedom of movement across the island of Ireland. Because obviously, in Ireland, then there would have to be some sort of European border. So the problem for the British Tory Party and the British Parliament is that it has been in disarray for the past 24 months, if not longer, in terms of trying to negotiate and deal with this. The reality is that Ireland and the other 26 member states are solidly together, and they're saying, no, we are protecting Ireland, we are protecting the border, we are protecting, you know, we're not going to have a hard border, we're going to have freedom of movement. So they've stood up to that. The reality is, Theresa May going in the Tories, is that it's increasingly the far right that are emerging. But it's irrelevant in terms of who has the premiership in Britain, because they still have to go to Europe, and they're not going to get anything extra from Europe. So, you know, this isn't, you know, there's no magic formula to this. It's solved. Europe has set out its stall. Either Britain accepts it or doesn't, or it leaves without a deal, and that's a matter for itself. But it does impact, because what we have here was the institutions aren't functioning. And I don't know anyone that the circles I move in want the institutions reestablished. The institutions being reestablished without rights being delivered, without, you know, all the social issues being addressed. And we also have the corruption of the DUP, but we've 10 DUP MPs that are propping up a Tory government that's limping from crisis to crisis.
Yeah.
And the DUP, in some senses, you know, the DUP were in the institutions, there's RHI, there were other scandals in terms of allegations of corruption, but fundamentally it was still inherently sectarian at its heart in terms of how it dealt with things. That Arlene Foster's treatment of Martin McGuinness, treatment of nationalists, I just think that there were no lessons learned from the DUP in terms of trying to reach out. Martin McGuinness went the extra mile on every occasion in terms of trying to build the relationships, and none of it was reciprocated. And then we had the issue of her denying the families that I work with and support, who managed to successfully, we've worked with them and lawyers, to successfully have inquests into the killings decades later, like Paula Murphy and others. And really what happened was then what she done was denied the funding to go to the court system to hear these inquests. So we then as an organization and families had to take her to court, and she was found in violation of the right, and that she had acted illegally in withholding the money. And this is the type of stuff they were doing in government. And going to government now with them while they prop up the Tories, if they didn't get what they wanted in Stormontshire, they'd threaten the Tories and get it through the side door. So, you know, politics is not in a healthy place at the minute, and we need to be cautious of how we move forward. And the whole issue of legacy, as I said, it's the outstanding part of the jigsaw that needs to be addressed.
Yeah,
and now we're doing a lot of noise.
Okay, Mark, I just want to ask you, though, are you saying or implying that the lack, you know, of the Northern Ireland Assembly, which is now dragging on, and for those of us outside looking in, say, isn't it somewhat ironic that as we sing and speak, you know, of hundreds of years of British oppression, the Good Friday Agreement finally got, you know, home rule, got an assembly in Northern Ireland, and here they are somehow between them, they scootered up. And I just want to get your feeling on that. Is are you and are those who are involved with Relatives for Justice in addressing the past, are you saying that it's no great loss if in fact the assembly is only going to address some of the issues and perhaps be contributory in just not dealing with the past?
Okay, there are a couple of things. People would want the institutions to function properly and in the interest of people and society as a whole. The reality is, in the last decade where Martin McGuinness attempted to work the institutions, they did not deliver on Irish language rights. They did not deliver on rights of legacy and victims for seeking justice. They did not deliver on LGBT rights. They did not deliver on women's right to choose. There was a whole range, a whole swathe of rights. So people don't want an assembly to revert back to the way it was, where the DUP exercised the veto over the rights of those people in our society and right across our society who were looking for change. So, you know, whether you were LGBT, whether you were a victim of a conflict, or you spoke the Irish language, or you were for women's fertility rights, all of those issues, the DUP exercised a veto. So what was the point in terms of you couldn't deliver any rights? And that's why Martin McGuinness called time between corruption and the denial of rights. So we finished the walk back in the assembly. We just pick up where we left off. Now, there are negotiations going on, but we have a British Secretary of State here, and we've met her and we've challenged her around some of the things that she said.
I know.
Because she recently said that all the killings by the British Army were appropriate and dignified, and then she had to backtrack because we presented her with the evidence that the majority of people killed were uninvolved civilians and children, and that her comments were odious. But the woman, and I'm just being dead straight, is an imbecile. And it's been seen in the last while, even in terms of dealing with the victims of institutional abuse who are now adults seeking compensation, or any of the other issues that are out there. The woman is not at the races and has no more interest in the North than anyone, and that's part of the problem. And the Tories are more occupied with Brexit and what's going on in their own parliament, and that any attempt to try and get talks going haven't been real or meaningful and haven't dealt with the substantive issues. And there is no point in heading back to Stormont, no point in devolved government that doesn't deliver for citizens across this part of the island. And, you know, so people are now looking at the issue of Brexit and the prospect of a united Ireland. The people are saying, well, listen, mean, it might be the case that we mightn't get our rights in a storm at the executive, but if we have a border poll that's written into the Good Friday Agreement and we work towards a border poll, we will realise our rights in a new unified and agreed Ireland that brings our unionist brothers and sisters with us and addresses their issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think people and nationalists are increasingly saying, well, Stormont has tried and it's failed and it hasn't delivered. We need to move on to the next phase, and the next phase of the Good Friday Agreement is a border poll. Now, unfortunately, calling a border poll is a matter for a British Secretary of State, and whilst they're in bed with the DUP, they're not going to do anything that upsets the DUP. So the DUP are against justice for victims of state violence and collusion. They're against right for Irish language speakers. They're against right for the LGBT community, and they're against right for the women's fertility and right to choose. All of those issues are out there. The DUP has set its face against those, and they have a fundamental view of this that is even of the dark ages in the last century, and nobody wants to go back to that.
I think that, you are indeed coming here on relatively short notice, and obviously, there will be, you know, there will be great interest, and I just want to give an overview of the schedule. Of course, you'd be on Sunday, June 2nd. You will be in Philadelphia at Max Sweeney's, and actually, let me just rattle off where the launches are going to be. And then you can obviously follow up on the website. And the third, Professor McGovern and yourself, Mark Thompson, in New York City for the event that's going to be at O'Lunny's in Times Square. On Thursday, Rutherford, New Jersey, at an event now being organized by Malachy McAllister. On Friday the 7th at Watertown AOH Hall in Watertown Street near Boston, Newport, Rhode Island, on Saturday the 8th, and on Sunday the 9th, Bridgeport, AOH and the American Club at Fairfield, Connecticut. And you finish up on Monday in Albany on the 10th at the American Irish Heritage Museum there. Can I ask you, Mark Thompson, for those who might say, is your organization, the Relatives for Justice, are they engrossed in every aspect of the principles of the Good Friday Agreement? Is this organization totally dedicated to, as it suggests, justice for the relatives, or is it perceived to be, you know, a group who, you know, have a broader political agenda?
Well, the organization is a charitable NGO. It provides mental health services. It provides mm-hmm. a range of services, including advocacy and legal services. People often ask me this, and let me put it quite simple, Adrian. The British Army and the RUC killed almost 400 people. 97% of those they killed were Catholics, Nationalists and Republicans. Now, you can't say to those victims, oh, you're all one-sided. The victims mm-hmm. emerged from the constituency of people that were killed. The killings in themselves and the targeting of those guns was really against one community. So we emerged from a Nationalist, Republican, Catholic kind of tradition community as victims. But we also work with people in our community beyond that who have been hurt by Republicans during the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And we have worked in more recent years with people in the Loyalist Protestant community who have been affected by the conflict too, who come to us. So we have an open door approach. We have principles and guided by international instruments of human rights, the European Convention on Human Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, as it emerges out of Geneva and the United Nations. So we have an open door policy. We're non-judgmental. And we brought We brought two Protestant victims to Congress a number of years ago, along with Catholic victims. We brought Eamon McCord, and we brought Paul McElwain, and we introduced them in Congress, and we introduced them and lobbied for them and brought them to America. So their cases could be heard too. So we're non-party political, we're non-sectarian, but we have an analysis of the conflict and what's wrong, and we have to have an analysis of the political situation and system that denies victims a right to truth. So if politicians are making fundamental decisions and policy decisions that deny victims their rights, we have to challenge that government, whether it's the British government, the Irish government, or the institutions here in Stormont, and we take them to the relevant courts to assert our rights, and they have them vindicated. So that's the business we're involved in. And if it's all the killers...
But you're doing it... You started off as, you know, a small group of volunteer organization, you know, a volunteer campaign group. And if you look at the strides that you've made, you know, since the beginning, you are making tremendous strides. Definitely you're not allowing, in the midst of all the shuffle of Brexit and perhaps Secretary of State coming into Northern Ireland, who many would say didn't do her homework. You are making strides. I am not surprised at all that you would bring, this is probably very timely to bring this to America. And to indeed through the AOH and many other organizations, good luck to you. I would suggest, can you give me a website for those who may want to know more, those first of all who want to know what you're all about, and secondly those who might want to attend event.
Well, the organization Relatives for Justice, just type it into the internet and you'll go to our website. We're on Twitter and Facebook as well. So, you know, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and through our website. The website has details of the trip. And I do want to reach out and also say that we want to thank the AOH in particular. Martin Galvin, Sean Penza, Jerry Cole, Dan Dennehy, you know, people that are on the East Coast that have been really putting their weight behind us and supporting us. Dolores Daychup in Albany and others, and Danny O'Connell and the current president, Judge James McKay. So the AOH have been fully supportive of us, and we appreciate that. And, you know, we are an organization that's our primary interest is in the function of equality, rights, and justice. If it puts to be applicable to every citizen, irrelevant if you're a unionist, a loyalist, a Protestant, a Catholic, no matter what, if you have suffered injustice in the conflict, our door is open. We're here. We'll work for anyone because that's what we're about. And, you know, we play it with a straight bat. And, you know, a lot of the British and politicians would like to pigeonhole you and use propaganda. And
right, I know.
You know, we've been through all of that. But I want to say one thing just to finish, and it's important to give you a measure of the families we work with and what we do. There are former British squadrons that were sent from England to patrol these areas in 17, 18, 19, early 20s. They came here and admitted did horrendous things, or witnessed or seen them. And they're now men in their 40s, late 40s, 50s, 60s. And they visit, and they're called Veterans for Peace. And those people are coming over from England, and we're meeting with them, and families are meeting with them, and there's a whole process of reconciliation. But underlying, fundamentally, that foundation has to be truth about what the British did in our country. You know, and we have to have that process addressed to move forward. And it's really important because there is a big campaign in Britain to give an amnesty to the British Army, isn't it?
Yeah.
To say, you know, because they know they've done wrong and they know they're going to get caught at all of this stuff, and they can only stop the tide for so long, but the dam will burst. But it's about bringing justice, equality, and this book, Counterinsurgency and Collusion in the North of Ireland, Professor Mark McGovern and Relatives for Justice. We're urging people, come along, read the book, get to the truth, and support us, and get involved. So,
Mark,
and we want to thank you.
You're very welcome indeed, and thank you. All right, Mark Thompson again, friends. Yes, go to the website, There's a lot. This is not a fly-by-night outfit at all. And one of the reasons that I am, happy to welcome Mark Thompson is that the Relatives for Justice, non-sectarian, it may sound like it's one-sided, it's not, and well worth getting the information, logging on again to relativesforjustice.com. And friends, you are listening to The Flannelly Show. We're coming to you live from New York on this holiday weekend, the holiday being, of course, Memorial Day, which